So I just want to introduce Jason Ritchie. Again, he's the head of our neuromodulation business and also the head of the U.S. region. So please welcome Jason.
Thank you. Good morning, and thanks for being here. You know, I know you all travel and follow a lot of different medical device companies, and the fact that you took the time to come and hear what we have to say is a big deal, and I'm really excited to share that strategy with you. So from me to you, thanks for that. You know, it's an exciting time to be in neuromodulation. There's so many neat things happening in terms of technology, in terms of methodology and expansion, that it's really a neat time to be in this space. But more importantly, it's exciting to sell vagus nerve stimulation. Because I can tell you this, in my 20 years of medical device, I have never seen a device that can impact patients and their families the way this technology does. I just have never seen it. And so, you know, we've had a heck of a run for the last 24 months. And I was thinking this morning as I was having breakfast, if I were you, what questions would you have for me? And there were two big questions that came up and actually were validated through the booth this morning. The first question being, can you maintain this pace? And then the second question was, with the right investment, could you accelerate your growth trajectory? Well, I can tell you this. I've been fortunate enough to work with vagus nerve stimulation for the last 16 and a half years, and I've never been more excited about our future. Never. Over the next 20 minutes, I want to walk you through our strategy in epilepsy, as well as touch on depression. And I'm confident at the end of this presentation, you'll agree that yes, we can sustain this growth trajectory, and more importantly, I think we can accelerate it. Now, I want to make sure we have a chance to answer all of your questions. So at the end of the presentation, we will have a time for Q&A. With that, let's go ahead and get started. Now, it's important to know that at LivaNova, we're a pioneer in neuromodulation, and we happen to be the world leader in modulating the vagus nerve. We have a strong epilepsy business with significant growth opportunities, which I'm going to walk you through. We're fully committed to helping patients with treatment-resistant depression, as we feel there's a large unmet global need. Our call points include neurology, epileptology, psychiatry, neurosurgery, and ultimately, though, the patients that are under their care. We have regulatory approval in the United States and in Europe to market and sell this device for treatment-resistant epilepsy, as well as treatment-resistant depression, two markets that we feel we have a long runway for growth. Now, before I dive into our franchise specifically, I think it's important to just touch on the neuromodulation market. As you can see, it's a large and growing market expected to reach $6.2 billion by 2020 at a compounded annual growth rate of over 11%. With that being said, we see large strategics as well as startups spending a lot of time and effort in technological advancements, indication expansion, patient awareness, and equally as important, physician acceptance and adoption. And at LivaNova, we're the same. This is the same areas of interest for us. But with that, let's take a deeper look into our epilepsy strategy because I want to get you really comfortable with it. It's important to know that epilepsy affects 1% of the population. That doesn't seem like a lot until you do the math. If you look at our three areas of robust interest, which are North America, Western Europe, and Japan, that means there's roughly 10 million patients that have a diagnosis of epilepsy. Okay? Now, there's robust clinical evidence, including multiple publications in the New England Journal of Medicine, which validates that one in three of these patients will suffer from what's known as drug-resistant epilepsy, which means that drugs simply don't work for them, and they require different treatment options. Okay? So that's the market, and any one of these drug-resistant patients could become a vagus nerve stimulation patient at some point in time. But there are some challenges to this market. As you can see, we have an issue which we call the referral gap. And what that means is that roughly 10% of these 3 million patients make their way into an epilepsy monitoring unit on an annual basis. So what happens there? Well, an epilepsy monitoring unit is a team of physicians and technicians that will admit a patient to the hospital for 3 to 5 days, reduce the medicines that they're on, and try and elicit a seizure or two, and in many cases, multiple seizures. They do that for a very specific reason. They want to try and pinpoint the area of the brain where the seizure is happening, and then they want to determine an appropriate treatment pathway for that patient. But unfortunately, today, there is a big referral gap in that only about 10% of patients make it that way. There's also a treatment gap, because what you can see is that after a patient makes it to an epilepsy monitoring unit, only about 5% of these patients leave that EMU with the treatment outside of yet another medication. It's a little frustrating for us, but I see it as a robust opportunity. It's not often in your career that you can look at an opportunity like this and say, wow, what a long runway for growth. And I feel that we have a technology that can robustly shake the way that current treatment practices are happening, and we can improve the way that we treat patients with epilepsy. So how do we do it? Well, we expect to grow through innovation and patient awareness. That starts with removing barriers to use. It includes new and innovative technology releases every 12 to 24 months. We want to focus on strategic international opportunities. We want to enhance patient awareness, because we know that when a patient asks for a therapy, they typically receive it. All right, so we're working on a lot of different methods to find out where patients go to receive their information about their epilepsy, and we're strategically working with them in order to drive appropriate information to these patients so that they can make well-informed treatment decisions. So patient awareness is a big focus for us. And then finally, we need to get more flexible as an organization, and we want to build out our capabilities from an R&D perspective, because as you heard from Damien and Thad, we're interested in M&A. And so I want to walk you through specifically some things that we're doing as an R&D team to build out our existing capabilities and make our platform more robust so we can easily fold in acquired technologies. Okay, and I'll go into each one of these in more detail. So my team over the last 12 to 16 months has been busy trying to remove barriers to use. All right, and in 2017, we were successful in two very big areas. First, we were successful in working with the FDA to expand VNS therapy access to patients as young as 4 years of age in the United States. Historically, it was 12. So why is this important? Well, epilepsy typically presents very early in life, before adolescence. Epilepsy is also a chronic disorder that gets worse over time. And we know that the earlier we can treat these patients with this chronic illness with VNS therapy, they have clinically better outcomes. They just do. We also know that VNS therapy has been shown to help children reach key developmental milestones. So we want to help them. I see this as a big win for us, and it certainly adds to what we can say, where we can go, and the conversations that our sales team and marketing team can have. The second victory was working with the FDA and with DEKRA to expand our MRI label indication. Now let me take a step back to add some clarity on this. Historically, VNS therapy had MRI labeling approval, but it was for very limited scans, and it required very expensive technology in order to do these scans. With our new label indications, which I want to note, the team started and finished in 10 months, which I think is a record in the medical device industry, but 10 months from start to finish in submission with the FDA, we've been able to successfully expand our labeling around MRI, so now patients can have access to more than 90% of all MRI scans that they might need. And they don't require this expensive and complicated equipment in order to do them. So the benefit to the patient and the patient's family is now they can go to any MRI center, which is dramatically less of a distance to travel, because please keep in mind, patients with epilepsy can't drive. So proximity to treatment is a very, very important ingredient. All right, so these were two wins around removing barriers to use that we're really excited about. The second part is innovation. At the heart of our innovative strategy is really focusing on providing devices that are easy to use, focusing on better patient care, and delivering cost-effective treatment solutions. Now, Centiva, which hopefully you got a chance to see at the booth this morning, is one of the first products that was developed with all three of these key elements at the heart of its development. In addition to being smaller, smarter, and faster, Centiva offers a lot of new features and benefits for both clinicians and for patients. You know, one of those features is scheduled dosing, just to give you some clarity. Historically, with VNS therapy, when a patient was implanted with the device, they waited 2 weeks before they turned the device on. And then it was a course of 7 sequential visits to get a patient to a therapeutic dose, because you can't just turn the device on at a high amplitude. It doesn't work that way. Very uncomfortable for the patient. Well, we want to make smarter devices. So this new device now has scheduled dosing to where they can go and visit with their neurologist, and the neurologist will plan out a course to get that patient to a therapeutic dose over the next what would be hypothetical visits, and the device will automatically titrate itself up to that. What's the benefit? Well, I mentioned transportation is an issue for patients. Now they don't have to go and see the neurologist until they get to their therapeutic dose. For the physician, it gives them flexibility to see more patients. And from a healthcare economics perspective, it's less healthcare burden. We're really excited about this. But the team I have in Houston is remarkable. They didn't want to stop at just a new implantable pulse generator. They wanted to carry it further. So they invented a brand new and completely re-engineered wireless wand. Note I said wireless because that's going to be a big play today. They also have come out with a brand new dosing tablet, which you saw. And most importantly, we've expanded our capabilities and completely re-engineered our user interface with user simplicity at the heart of its design. This is a big step forward. Future generations of Centiva promise to really focus on user simplification. We will be building more robust stimulation paradigms, and we want to get mobile. That's a big one. By a show of hands, how many people in the room have a smartphone? Can I see? Oh, that was a lot of hands. How many people have a smartwatch? iPhone, iWatch, yeah, okay. You know, I could go around the room and ask you why you have it, but at the end of the day, it comes back to data. People make decisions based off of data. So imagine a device that's an active implantable that can communicate with wearable technology like smartwatches, or can communicate with apps. There's a lot of benefit in that from a data and analytical perspective, also from a more comprehensive disease management perspective. So this enables patients to take a much more active role in their treatment. But from a physician perspective, now they can remotely monitor patients' activity as well as device diagnostics. The team in Houston promises to deliver this in the next generations of Centiva. So that's where we're headed, folks, and I'm excited to be a part of it. Now, in addition to removal of barriers, and in addition to innovation, I think we have a really special international opportunity. Today, there's more than 100,000 patients globally utilizing VNS therapy to better manage their epilepsy and simultaneously live a better life. But today, 85% of those patients come from the United States. I'm convinced that with the right targeting and right commercial funding, we have a unique opportunity in specific European markets as well as Japan, in order to help accelerate our growth trajectory. I'm actually so confident with it that I've committed to Damien and Thad that I think we can double that business over the course of the next 5 years. And that's something we're going to do. Now, I mentioned data, data, data. Everybody likes data. Physicians make treatment decisions based off of robust clinical evidence. All right? And neurology is no exception. That being said, as we launch Centiva, we plan to launch multiple clinical studies to, number one, reinforce our clinical evidence, and two, build additional user adoption. In parallel with launching Centiva, we plan to launch a VNS patient registry, which will be focusing on Centiva patients. And you know, I really like registries, because what can be more compelling than your own experience? You know, a registry gives physicians a chance to track their patients in real time, to see how they're doing in terms of seizure improvements, to qualify their quality of life improvements. But I think another important element of this, and I spoke to it earlier, is the health economic aspect to this. All right? It's a spirit of the way that we innovate, and it's something that's critically important in today's healthcare environment. So physicians are going to have the ability to evaluate how patients with Centiva reduce their dependence and consumption of healthcare resources over time. Look for this to launch in parallel with Centiva this year. In addition, we're going to launch an early adjunctive study in 2018. And the question is why? Why would you do something like this? You already have data. You have a lot of different sets of information that show that VNS therapy works better in these patients. Well, I think it's important to do a prospective multicenter study and now include our new label indications, which is children as young as 4. Why? Because in many scenarios, VNS therapy has historically been used at the end, sort of a means to an end. It's like throwing in the towel. We've tried 20 different medicines, 20 different ways. A patient has failed epilepsy surgery, and now we'll try a vagus nerve stimulator. At LivaNova, we think that's the wrong way to look at it. We think that early adjunctive use with VNS therapy can dramatically improve seizures, improve recovery times, and ultimately aid in child development. So look for this clinical to start in the second half of 2018. And then finally, building out our platform. You know, there's two things that come with this. The first part is enhancing what we have today, and I talked about wearable technology. I saw quite a few hands in terms of people that use smartphones and apps and portals and all that neat stuff. We're there right now. But you heard from Damien, and you heard from Thad that we're really interested in M&A. You know, there's a lot of different indications that pique our interest, and there's a lot of areas with which we think we could go. The complexity in doing this, though, is as you look at these companies to acquire, many of their devices are very expensive to build, and in many cases, were outsourced and designed to do clinicals rather than to commercially populate. So I met with John Murphy, who I think you guys have had a chance to meet, but if you haven't, he'll be at the booth. And I said, "Could you build a more universal platform? Imagine a robust stim engine to where you could look at acquiring technologies and then already just fold them in to your existing and proven platform." Because what that does is a couple of things. Number one, you streamline manufacturing and control cost. Two, you avoid any type of quality issues. And three, you have the ability to enhance those acquired technologies. So if we bought a technology that was in another indication and we're able to fold it into our existing platform that we have now, we can enhance it overnight. We can give it Bluetooth Low Energy. We can let it communicate with apps. We can let it communicate with smart and wearable technologies. So that's what we're planning to do. Let me pivot to depression for a second because I think that this is an important thing. Also, sorry for the audience participation, but by a show of hands, does anybody in the room know anybody affected by depression? A lot of hands. That's a lot of hands. Depression's big. It's very big. As a matter of fact, depression affects over 300 million people worldwide. It happens to be the leading cause of disability in the United States, and it often affects patients in the prime of their life, right? This has massive impact not only on the patient, but the patient's family and the healthcare system as a whole. It costs a fortune to treat. There's a dark side to this, an even darker side to this, which is treatment-resistant depression, which affects between 10% and 30% of the population, depending on where you go. These patients are exactly that, treatment-resistant. So this is the worst type of depression that you can have because you're impacted by this disease, and there's no cure for you. There's no solution. Despite using multiple therapies and multiple medicines, they just don't work. All right? These patients are prone to relapse, less remission, and a lot of side effects and social burden. Well, in a recent publication by Dr. Scott Aronson of Sheppard Pratt, VNS therapy may open the door to helping these people and providing them with hope. In his study of 800 TRD patients that had failed more than 4 antidepressant treatments over the course of 5 years, he evaluated the effectiveness of VNS compared to treatment as usual. And what these data suggest is that VNS can more robustly treat these patients and find a way for them to respond. 41% of patients responded in the treatment as usual arm, compared to almost 68% of VNS therapy patients treated with depression. So we're incredibly encouraged by this data, and it's given us new hope to pursue this indication. Now, many of you in the room may be familiar with the Cyberonics legacy of treatment-resistant depression and the long regulatory history. If you're not, let me bring you through a quick history. We received CE mark in 2001 to utilize VNS therapy for treating treatment-resistant depression. In 2005, the FDA granted acceptance for using VNS therapy for treatment-resistant depression, and there was an 18-month window where CMS paid for this device. During that time, the team was incredibly effective at expanding this market. As a matter of fact, they implanted more than 4,000 patients in a brand-new disease state that they didn't know much about, which goes to show us that there is a huge unmet need. Unfortunately, in the middle of 2006, CMS published a non-coverage decision, which brought our commercial efforts to a screeching halt. All right? However, in lieu of the recent publication and findings from Dr. Aaronson and his team, we've started a pilot trial in Germany. So why Germany? Well, in Germany, not only is there regulatory approval, but they also reimburse the device for treating treatment-resistant depression. We're learning a lot from this trial, and we're looking at other European markets that have favorable reimbursement climates as places where we can go next. In the meantime, Brian Olin and his team are working very closely with CMS in order to continue our dialogue and hopefully find a treatment pathway and a reimbursement pathway for people in the United States, because there's a huge unmet need. In summary, you know, we're pioneers in neuromodulation, and we feel we have robust growth opportunity. In epilepsy, we're fully committed to removing barriers to use. We're fully committed to innovating with the right cadence and in the right areas. We think we have a significant runway for growth outside of the U.S. as well as in the U.S., and I think that there's an opportunity for both organic and inorganic growth. In depression, well, you saw it. It's a huge market, and there's a huge unmet global need. Recent data suggests that VNS Therapy can dramatically improve the lives of people touched by TRD. We're in the process of doing a pilot in Europe, and we continue our communications with CMS in the United States in order to try and find a reimbursement pathway. And then finally, the future of our technology. Number one, we're going wireless. That's happening now. All right? But we want to expand those capabilities to build a more robust infrastructure and more robust platform to where we can easily fold in acquired technologies and expand their capabilities while simultaneously standardizing our manufacturing processes and incorporating acquired technologies with the proven platform that we know in VNS Therapy. Right? So again, thanks for your attention. I appreciate you being here. That concludes the presentation. I hope that after seeing this, you can better understand the answers to those questions, which are, yes, we absolutely can sustain our growth trajectory, and there's a lot of things that we're doing that suggest that we could absolutely accelerate it. With that, I'd like to invite Damien McDonald to the stage, and we can take some Q&A. Oh, and Karen, sorry.
The neuromodulation questions. Yep, go ahead.
Okay. Matt O'Brien, Piper Jaffray. Just to start with on the international opportunity that you talked about, you grew about 6% last year in your OUS neuro business. You're going to need to double that growth rate to get to the 2022 talking about there. And that's, you know, if you're able to get there, that's about 100 basis points contribution to the top line for the overall company. I mean, can you just give us a little more detail on how you're going to accelerate that level of growth or accelerate that much growth?
Absolutely. A couple of things. You know, before I came back to the U.S., I've been back in the U.S. for 2 years. Before that, I was leading Cyberonics' international strategy, and we were successful in turning a $12 million business into a $60 million business that had a 20-year-old technology. So I fully believe it's doable. You know, when you go through a merger, they're complicated. Sometimes they're messy. And in this instance, there was a lot of confusion and a lot of mix-up in the team that was built over there. So I think getting more strategically focused on specific markets rather than going everywhere, looking at the markets where we know we can actually really move the pendulum, which are the U.K., the Nordics, Germany, Benelux countries, Spain, France, Italy, I think there's an absolutely a great opportunity to do it. And then the second piece of that is Japan. Within Japan right now, we utilize a partner, but we are exploring opportunities to beef up those initiatives. And I think that, in line with new product development, in line with enhancing our clinicals, is going to build a lot of adoption that'll get us to that rate. But I fully believe we can do it.
Okay. Just to push a little more, though, that acceleration that you're seeing, you're thinking probably, I think you have people in place likely in some of the countries you talked about. Japan will come on board. So maybe it's a little bit more, you know, back-end weighted as far as when you'll see that acceleration, or should we see more of it in 2018?
I think you'll start to see it in 2018. I think it'll really start to accelerate towards the second half.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, I think that point you made about a little disruption.
Yeah.
You know, the go-to-market strategy changed, you know, that was a vertical team and we changed to a geographic team. I think that was one thing. You know, we've brought in new leaders, you know, who I think are, you know, great drivers of commercial execution. And, you know, let's face it, you know, Cyberonics was reasonably cash constrained and, you know, the ability to put another dollar into Europe wasn't, you know, the easiest decision, whereas I think as a combined LivaNova, we've got a bit more flexibility in the P&L to be able to do that. So I think, you know, marketing resources, commercial focus, you know, really, really starts to change the trajectory there.
Thanks. And as a follow-up, just on the TRD side, having covered the company, you know, under Cyberonics' watch and going through that painful process, can you talk a little bit about where you think or how much contribution of that couple hundred million bucks in 2022 TRD will be adding to that? Because there's other technologies that are out there, so you're well. And then on the product side, that microburst comment that you had, I'd love to hear just a little bit more about, you know, the different part of the brain and the benefits you could get from treating that.
Right. The short answer is that as we look at TRD, right now we have initiatives working in Europe where there's a favorable reimbursement climate for this, and so we are counting on some of those coming from Europe. In terms of the U.S., giving you an exact number is a little bit difficult, although what I can tell you is that the negotiations and discussion we've had with CMS are different than they've been over the last decade. There's a much more open environment to have these conversations, and so if we're successful in securing coverage with evidence development in the U.S., that gives us the opportunity to now go to the private side of insurance and start selling and marketing the device as soon as that happens. But, you know, there's a couple of binary events that need to happen, which make it a little bit difficult to commit to a number on that at this point in time.
But it's fair to say that, you know, the discussions we've had with them since we've taken the Shepherd Pratt data in has been a substantial change in tone. Mm-hmm. And you know, we recently had a private payer summit. You know, and took them through the data as well with Professor Aronson. And again, I think we've changed the tone of the conversation because it's not arm waving; it's data driven now. And I think
right.
This is a very big difference to a decade ago.
Right, right. The second question you had was on microburst. You know, what we have found is through animal models, through doing microburst stimulation. And if you want more explanation on that, I suggest visiting with the group at the booth. But we're able to light up different areas of the brain. And actually, in this case, we're able to light up areas of the brain that are often modulated for deep brain stimulation. And we're confident that with microburst, at least in our primate models, we've seen dramatically reduced side effect profiles and also some fairly efficacious data. So we're really encouraged by this. If you think about it from a stimulation paradigm, we've been stimulating the nerve the same way for 20 years. And so adding some additional clinical science behind this, I think, is a step in the right direction.
In the back.
Hi, Christian Moore from Jefferies. Thanks for taking my questions. One on the pediatric indication that you just received in June. What kind of impact have you seen from that so far? And then obviously the benefits are clear, but is there any concern from parents impacting, you know, younger patients in the 4 to 10-year-old range with the need to replace the device several times over the course of the patient's life?
Right.
Is that a concern, and what have you heard on that front in the early rollout?
Yeah, well, I think the pediatric indication is a huge step forward for the points that I mentioned, in that epilepsy presents early in children. If it's refractory, you can see it very early, and if it's going to be refractory, it's going to be difficult to treat for the balance of the patient's life. So parents are incredibly encouraged by this, indication. In terms of device reimplantation, again, I've been doing this for 17 years almost, and I've never seen that as a big obstacle. Actually, I think device replacement is a very healthy thing, because if you look, you know, iPhone just celebrated their 10th anniversary with their iPhone XS, and there have been 16 different iteratives along the way, and I think medical devices are much the same way, that technology moves at the speed of light. If we can get regulatory to pick up a little bit, bringing new technologies that can not only build on what they have but make them more flexible is a good thing. And so parent feedback has been very, very positive. And I think also the profile, to be able to say that we're approved for children as young as 4 years of age, significantly reinforces our safety profile.
Thanks. And then one follow-up on pricing. I don't know if you've disclosed the gross margin for the Neuromod business within LivaNova, but Cyberonics at the close was around 90% and, you know, received some nice pricing tailwinds with new product launches. What are your expectations there going forward, and do you have the ability to continue to make gains on price?
Yeah, sure. So, look, we've really retained our price discipline here. As I said to you, right out of the gate, the Neuromod team, I think, was the most disciplined, candidly, of any med tech group I've ever seen. You know, if you put the pricing arrays up, it would pretty much two straight lines, US and the other geographies, and
yep.
It was really tremendous how disciplined they were. So, look, we've been able to continue to take price. And where we've had new technology introductions, Aspire SR was a significant bump. You know, Centiva, perhaps not the same bump as Aspire SR, but nevertheless, you know, it'll either give us a price increase or as importantly, protect us from downside. So we see the technology jumps really, you know, doing a balance between being able to price increase and protect us. And, you know, as we think about expanding internationally, again, we've really retained that discipline, certainly what I've seen in the last 9 months.
Other questions up here?
Yeah, it's great to hear you're expanding into TRD in Europe, but it seems quite bullish comments on the prospects in the US. So without putting words into your mouth, would you agree with the sentiments that it's more likely than not that you get favorable CMS or CMS funding?
This is where he paints you into a corner. And if I can figure out CMS, we'll have a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
Let's just say we're encouraged by the engagement. Yeah. You know, we think the tone of our conversation with CMS is different, and we believe they've responded well to that. Brian's nodding his head. You know, it's been as an engaged conversation as I've ever seen in a couple of decades with dealing with this. I think it's because we've taken a much more data-driven approach that, you know, we've had a more respectful response.
And in the event that that does happen, the end target customer, if you like, is it very similar, psychiatrists, neurologists, or would you need to build out a dedicated sales force?
I think that ultimately we probably build out another sales force just because although they're under the same academy, it is a different call point. It's a different disease state. And, you know, tactically, I like to make sure that we have field-based experts in whatever field they're in. And so I'd like to make sure that our epilepsy sales force remains laser-focused on epilepsy and then build out our capabilities for TRD.
I think we know a lot about that. That's one of the interesting things about our epilepsy model is we know how to move patients through a treatment pathway, you know, and so we know the implanter, and so being able to replicate that knowledge of the implanter is going to be relatively simple. It's about now having the clinical discussion with the psychiatrist to move them to the implanter. So, you know, there's not a you know, learning curve required on the implant side. So,
great.
So for those of you that haven't walked over to our booth, Brian Olin's here. He's our head of clinical and regulatory, and he is covering the depression booth as well.
Very last question for me then, please. And just with respect to following on from my colleague's comments on pricing, I mean, given the sheer scale of the TRD market, would LivaNova be prepared to accept lower pricing than it currently receives in epilepsy? Is that part of the consideration, or will you remain disciplined throughout the whole portfolio?
Let's first solve for reimbursement coverage. But again, we'd like to remain disciplined. And again, I think, and not just in this product, but in, you know, the Percival and the Heartland machines, we're actually building, I think, really strong health economics protocols that support the value proposition. So, but first, let's solve for the reimbursement.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, just curious about the indication expansion. So looking at that chart, I didn't see spinal cord stimulation on there. Is that something you'd potentially be interested in? And then how do you sort of decide between what you pursue developing internally versus going outside and doing an acquisition?
Mm-hmm. Right. I wouldn't take anything off the table. Spinal cord stimulation has a place. I think we would have to look at this and say, is this something to where we can be one or two? And if the answer is yes, maybe we pursue it. But at this point in time, I would say it's not in our top five.
I think there's some other nearer term.
Yeah.
You know, like the obstructive sleep apnea, you know, we have an equity investment in Inthera, as you know. I think, you know, inflammation, you know, Crohn's disease is sort of nearer than perhaps spinal cord stimulation is.
Right.
Okay, thanks. And then just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on the DTC strategy and you know, if you're making any changes there from what you've done in the past. Is there any potential to do, you know, more of a media campaign versus just internet approach, et cetera?
Yeah, we're working with a couple of agencies right now to really determine where patients go for information so that we're calculated with how we do that, because with a DTC campaign, you can spend a ton of money and basically throw it out the window. So we want to make sure that we're very strategic about how we do it. We have worked with several different agencies, and we're working on search engine optimization and search engine marketing techniques at this point in time with both Bing and Google. In addition, we've partnered with WebMD to help with this initiative. We just launched with the WebMD with a very small investment and had six patients identified within about a week, which was pretty exciting. The other part of this that we know is that we queried neurologists through market intelligence to find out if this would be a good thing to do, and we found that 90% of neurologists will listen to what their patients have to say when it comes to directing their treatment, and about 76% of them are very much interested in what the patient wants in terms of driving their treatment that way. So that's kind of where we are. In terms of completely outlining the project, we're still in the scaling phase, but we have built it into the budget for 2018.
All right, thanks.